You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Ava Berardi. Governor Tina Kotek announced last week that she will send her chief of staff to direct Oregon's beleaguered transportation department. As Dirk Vanderhart reports, that came after the state's lone finalist to lead the agency fell through.
In mid-May, Kotek flew out the state's top candidate following a roughly six-month search. The finalist, a federal highway official based in the Midwest, met with state officials and union representatives, but the hire quickly fell apart. It's not clear whether Kotek or the candidate decided not to move forward, but the incident reflects the challenge of finding a leader for the troubled Oregon Department of Transportation. Faced with a structural funding hole, the agency has left vacant positions unfilled and stripped funding from some programs just to complete basic work. Things could get more dire if lawmakers can't pass a new funding bill next year. Oregon voters shot down a package of tax and fee increases for ODOT in the May election. In the meantime, the state's hunt for a permanent director continues. I'm Dirk Vanderhart reporting.
Les Schwab Tires is laying off 70 employees at its head offices in Bend. Christian Fodenvenzel reports.
Les Schwab runs about 600 tire stores across 15 western states. It's one of Oregon's largest employers with 9,000 staff, but it's now laying off 70 people. In a statement, Chief Administrative Officer Jody Husky said the changes aren't driven by short-term business challenges, but to better support company stores moving forward. The statement also said that the company recognized the impact that layoffs have on workers. They'll receive severance packages, extended benefits, and help transitioning to new work. About 430 people remain at Schwab's headquarters. The company's added more than 100 new locations in four new states over the past 3 years and is planning to add another 30 more this year. Founded in Prineville in 1952 by Les Schwab, the company was bought by a California investment firm in 2020.
I'm Christian Fodenvenzel reporting.
A bald eagle baby that fell from its nest in Eugene is now being re-nested by the Cascades Raptor Center. KLCC's Julia Bobach reports on the ongoing mission.
In Skinner Butte Park, people are looking up at a bald eagle nest. In the nest, a young eagle is missing its sibling. In a nearby tree, mom watches carefully as arborists cut branches to make way for the transport of her eaglet. Katie McInnes, a veterinarian at the Raptor Center, says the conservation of bald eagles in the country has been a success, but rescue missions like this are still necessary.
We see a lot more of them these days, and so getting this little guy back to his family is important just because this is the best chance he has at succeeding in life.
The first attempt to re-nest the eaglet fell short, literally. The truck's crane was not tall enough to reach the nest, and so the baby eagle will have to wait a bit longer to be reunited with its family. I'm Julia Bobach, reporting.
The Bandon School District is trying to move forward, with a recent superintendent resignation and an investigation underway. Jefferson Public Radio's Jane Vaughn reports.
At a Monday meeting, the school board discussed the hiring timeline and salary range for an interim superintendent. That person will serve for 1 year while the district finds a permanent replacement. Board members discussed potentially hiring a part-time interim. Vince Adams with the Oregon School Boards Association agreed.
That may make the position more enticing. You may find people, because of where Bandon is located, you may find people that will be willing to commute in into town and be there for 4 days, and then they go home to wherever they are.
The district's current superintendent resigned, effective at the end of the month. She's also on paid administrative leave while a third party investigates complaints against her. The board also appointed two new members Monday to fill seats left vacant by resignations. I'm Jane Vaughn reporting.
The Jackson County Sheriff's Office is removing bed space at its jail in July. Jefferson Public Radio's Justin Higginbottom reports that comes amid rising costs for law enforcement.
The Sheriff's Office will be cutting around 60 beds from its jail next month, around 20% of total capacity. Sheriff Nate Sickler says the reductions are needed as costs for labor, medical care, and materials outpaces revenue.
There's really no way forward. This is not a trend that I think is reversible. Just from the way that the county government is set up, there's not a means for the counties to readily increase revenues without going to the voters.
He says a law enforcement tax is the only solution to increase services, but that's unlikely to pass in the current economy. The Jackson County Jail is already regularly at capacity. Sickler predicts letting more people out will negatively affect community safety. I'm Justin Higginbottom in Ashland.
You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. Now moving to news from Washington. A significant evidentiary issue has unfolded in a Pacific County case involving a mother who allegedly threw a knife at her teenage son. Sarah A. Martin Washoe faces a charge of domestic violence, second-degree assault for the incident. Her son allegedly required stitches at Ocean Beach Hospital. Investigators later entered the home and took photos of the blood splatter and collected the knife and teen's shirt. Now, Martin Washoe's attorney claims investigators conducted the search without a warrant and never told Martin Washoe that she could lawfully refuse to consent to the search. A Pacific County court judge will hear arguments regarding the motion next week. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com. A new Washington law requires employers to give workers at least 5 days heads up if federal agents are auditing their payrolls. State government reporter Sarah Mises-Tan reports it takes effect this week.
Employers could be fined up to $500 for each instance of failing to notify workers of a federal audit on records like I-9 forms. The goal is to protect workers who could be caught in federal immigration sweeps.
Employees, especially immigrant communities, can feel a little safer in their workplace because the state of Washington relies on our immigrant community for so many of our sectors.
That's Representative Lillian Ortiz Self, who sponsored the bill. It's estimated that immigrants contribute about $145 billion to Washington's economy every year. The new law builds on existing legislation in Washington around keeping immigrants safe, like establishing immigration enforcement free zones. In Olympia, I'm Sarah Mises-Tan.
Gas prices are falling across the Northwest, slowly. As SPR's Owen Henderson reports, this comes after prices hit record highs in Washington last month.
According to AAA, the statewide average price for a gallon of regular is about $5.25 in Washington. That's down about 8 cents from a week ago and 17 cents from last month's record high. In Idaho, Kootenai County's $4.37 average is the lowest countywide price anywhere in the Northwest. The Gem State's average sits at about $4.51, 10 cents less than a week ago. And Oregon's average is $5.11, 12 cents less than last week. All three states' averages are close to $1.15 higher than they were last year. I'm Owen Henderson, reporting.
Residents are about to move into Seattle's first big shelter, funded by Mayor Katie Wilson's administration. KUOW Scott Greenstone has more.
The mayor hosted the opening of a tiny house shelter in Interbay yesterday, 75 shed-sized homes called pallet shelters on a gravel lot. But Wilson addressed that she's fallen short on her campaign promise of 500 shelter beds by the World Cup.
So when people say, is it failure not to have created 500 units by now? What I want to say is, as long as there are thousands of people sleeping unsheltered on our streets, yes, we are failing.
Shelter providers who also spoke praised the speed at which the mayor's office set up this project, and the mayor called it among the fastest in Seattle history. More tiny house villages and RV parking lots are planned for later in the summer, some of which were already funded before Wilson took office. I'm Scott Greenstone in Seattle.
Residents of North Seattle along Aurora Avenue are on edge. That's after a recent surge of gun violence in a neighborhood that has been a longtime hotspot for human trafficking. City officials say they've been working urgently to close streets and assign police patrols. KUOW's Amy Radel explains.
In May, a series of rolling gun battles broke out on Aurora, allegedly between rival human traffickers. Resident Jake Wallach said a bullet struck his house just outside his infant's bedroom. Soon after, residents blocked three side streets with homemade barriers, but the city cleared them, and then the shooting started again. At a community meeting Wednesday night, an incensed Wallach addressed city officials.
What do you guys have to say about that? Like, you literally opened the road.
Many people were dismayed that Mayor Katie Wilson and City Attorney Erica Evans didn't attend the community meeting, but the mayor's representative, Allison Holcomb, said she heard exhaustion and resolve in the voices of residents.
We're here for the long haul. I think we need to sprint on a few things right now, and we all need to realize this is going to be a marathon.
Holcomb said the city will likely close access to some streets off Aurora, but she said they need a little more time to deliberate. Residents are trying to keep up the pressure. One of them, Peter Orr, says a march called Stop the Traffickers, Stop the Bullets is planned for this Saturday evening.
So we're for peace in our neighborhood and for justice for victims of the sex trade. That's what I'm marching for.
Residents want to know what police and prosecutors are doing to stem the violence related to human trafficking. Prosecutors said these cases are complicated and hard to prove, and there's a vigorous debate about the effectiveness of court orders to keep sex buyers out of the neighborhood. Former city attorney Ann Davison helped implement these so-called SOAP orders, or stay out of area of prostitution. She was in the audience at Wednesday's meeting. Davison says she never charged anyone with violating a SOAP order, and she takes that as a sign they were working.
I think people were staying away. I think the neighborhood saw a reduction in the amount of buyers that were circling, and then as soon as you diminish that, you're going to start to diminish the other parts.
But the new city attorney, Erica Evans, who replaced Davison, campaigned against SOAP orders, saying they aren't effective. She also said her office has not charged anyone this year with buying sex. She says those investigations rely on undercover operations that police are too understaffed to do.
It's extremely, extremely resource intensive on officers that are already limited right now, and not something that's been recently done.
Evan says she's taking routes that don't rely on hard-to-obtain criminal convictions. That could include trying to close nuisance properties on Aurora. She's also seeking funding for a prosecutor to file extreme risk protection orders against sex traffickers to take away their firearms. Meanwhile, across town, Mayor Wilson spoke at a Seattle City Club event on Wednesday night and said she's working to get more police presence to people worried about their safety along Aurora.
We also have emphasis patrols that SPD is doing right now, greater presence. We're stepping up the gun violence reduction unit in the area. And these are the immediate fixes, right? Like, no illusion that things like this are solving the longer term problem.
Sure. Mayor Wilson called the recent gun violence there unacceptable. Then there's the plight of the women and girls being trafficked in the neighborhood. Alex Voorhees is a senior deputy with the King County Prosecutor's Office. Her latest case involves a Bellevue man accused of trafficking a 14-year-old girl on Aurora. Voorhees says the recent gun violence is related to territorial disputes by people engaged in this lucrative human trafficking.
So what we see and hear in the work that we do, in the investigations that we work with detectives on, is a money-making machine.
Voorhees says many traffickers are also linked to gang activity and drug dealing, and they force the women selling sex on Aurora to meet brutal quotas.
I've seen text messages between pimps and girls that they have working for them where the girl is saying, I was just raped and I'm bleeding, and they're told to clean themselves up and get back out there.
Voorhees says it's very difficult to convict human traffickers because it requires the survivors of this abuse to testify against them. She wants Washington State to focus more on going after sex buyers, who she says currently face lower penalties than for stealing a candy bar from a convenience store. Her office has lobbied in Olympia to make sex buying a Class C felony, and she says those efforts will continue. I'm Amy Radel reporting.
Local and regional news is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News Team. For more local and regional news, go to kmun.org/news. You're listening to KMUN